All right.
Good morning, everybody. Good morning, all you magnificent melon heads of the world. Happy Tuesday, everybody. Today is February 17th, 2026. I hope all you folks in the States had a nice long weekend for President's Day. We are back this morning. We've got our regularly scheduled tech sell-off has resumed. But interestingly enough, we've got some geopolitical developments this morning. Iran has announced that they are temporarily, partially closing the Strait of Hormuz in order to hold naval exercises. They're shooting a bunch of missiles into the Strait of Hormuz. Now, this is important. The Strait of Hormuz, we've talked about this quite a bit on this channel in the past. At its narrowest point between Oman and Iran, it's only about 20 nautical miles wide. It is a one of the most important shipping bottlenecks in the world. About 20% of the world's oil flows through the Strait of Hormuz. And now they have at least claimed that they will temporarily, partially close it. We're going to look at marine traffic and look at just how much naval traffic is heeding that warning. But that's pretty important, though, right? Look, we've talked a lot about this. We've got these ongoing talks with the Iranians over their nuclear program. We bombed Iran a couple of months ago. What was it like over the summer? We blew up a whole bunch of their nuclear program. And then the Israelis also bombed Iran, blew up a bunch of their air defenses. That was earlier this year. And then we've had these ongoing protests in Iran. And the Iranian regime was looking like it was getting a little wobbly and that maybe it might topple. And then all of a sudden, we're talking about bombing them again over their nuclear program. And look, the reason why the Iranian regime is wobbly right now and why these protests have sprang up is because life has become unaffordable in Iran, largely due to Western sanctions. We have cut them off from the banking system. We're going after anybody who even does business with them. That makes it harder for Iran to get their oil sold. And if it's harder for them to sell their oil, that means it's harder for them to get dollars or to get euros or whatever currency they need to buy food, to buy vehicles, to buy everything the country needs to survive. And because they're dead set on funding every little pissant wannabe dictator warlord in the Middle East who's got a little militia, whether it be Hamas or Hezbollah or the Houthis or whatever they're calling themselves next weekies, maybe the Iranian people are a little sick of that. And they're like, hey, we just want life to be affordable. By the way, yes, I realize the irony of the United States also projecting its own military force around the world while things become unaffordable for the youth here in this country. It's almost like these two things rhyme. That's interesting. But as this is going on, look, the price of oil doesn't really seem to care here. It's barely moving. And so this tells me that this is very much saber rattling from the Iranian regime. These talks are ongoing. And we've got a fair amount of saber rattling on our side as well. We've got another aircraft carrier that's headed to the Middle East. We've got ground-based planes, as we speak, are being flown over to the Middle East while these talks are ongoing. Now, look, I think we learned the lesson in the Red Sea. We could blow up everything in Iran that's worth blowing up, and there's not a damn thing the Iranians could do about it, but it still wouldn't make a difference. If the Iranians want to close the Strait of Hormuz, there's nothing we can do about it. No matter what we bomb, we could turn the whole desert to glass. It wouldn't matter. The Houthis showed us in the Red Sea that, I mean, we blew up everything that is worth blowing up in Yemen, and they still were able to deny traffic in the Red Sea. They were still able to hit those tankers and all the container ships that were traversing the Bab el-Mandeb Strait. So that begs the question, let's say the Iranians do outright close the strait and none of these oil tankers are willing to traverse it. What happens then? Who does it hurt? Who does it help? I'm not really sure it hurts the United States, to be honest with you. I mean, it will be viewed as a geopolitical loss because we're unable to restore freedom of navigation. But as far as economically, the United States is one of the biggest producers of oil in the world. So it's going to drive up prices at the pump, but American companies will become more profitable. It's certainly going to help Venezuela, who we're trying to prop up right now. By the way, we have a lot of that Venezuelan crude. Maybe there's not that much of it yet, but we can still redirect that to ease the pain from the Strait of Hormuz. Europe would be taking it on the jaw. This would absolutely crush Europe if the Iranians were to permanently close the strait or outright close it. It would hurt the Saudis. It would hurt the Chinese. You know who it would really hurt, though? It would really hurt Iran. because it would be even harder for the Iranians to sell their oil if their tankers can't traverse the strait as either. So the Iranians are kind of playing with fire here. So is the United States. This is a war of economic attrition that they're threatening here with the closure of the strait. I'm not really sure who it hurts the most. It may hurt the people doing it more than it hurts us, their intended target. Now, even as that is going on this morning, we've got all kinds of things going on with the AI bubble. Several articles to this effect. First, UBS has come out with a rare downgrade of U.S. tech stocks. Why will not surprise you? Excessive CapEx, spending on data centers, uncertain profitability, and fierce competition as every day another model is getting released. The space is becoming heavily commoditized, which means there's no moat. That's going to force pricing lower as the expenses continue to rise. The inevitable is just around the corner. That's probably contributing to the sell-off in tech stocks this morning, which is continuing from last week. We've also got Bank of America is out with their monthly fund manager survey this morning, showing that U.S. hedge funds and other institutions are rotating out of U.S. techs, in particularly tech, in favor of other markets, also because of worries about an AI bubble front and center there. So we've got two banks warning about the AI bubble this morning. Even as Peter Navarro, President Trump's trade advisor, is out with a kind of a wishy-washy statement this morning saying that the Trump administration will force data center builders to internalize power costs. Okay, they're going to internalize power costs. That sounds great. What the hell does that mean? Because, oh, we're going to force them to buy their own power. Well, they're already buying their own power, and Meta's out with a statement that says, we pay for all the power we use. Yeah, we know that's the problem. You're paying for all the power you use, which means you're bidding up the little bit of power that is available on the power grid, driving power prices sharply higher for everybody else. By the way, anybody take a look at their power bills this month? Oh boy, those are great. You know, the cold winter combined with data centers, not going to look good. And affordability front and center in the election, the midterm narratives that's coming up this year. And so we don't really know what internalized power cost is going to mean. Maybe it means we're just going to claim we're doing a thing when we're really not doing jack shit about it. Or maybe it means we're going to require every one of these data centers to build their own power plants in order to power themselves without tapping into the grid, which would be nice. And we have an article in the Wall Street Journal just to that effect this morning. The Wall Street Journal's writing an article about companies that are taking old decommissioned jet engines, like 747 engines, and they're converting them into power plants for data centers, which, besides being wildly expensive and wildly inefficient, just goes to show you how desperate for power this bubble really is. They are running out of juice. They're driving up power costs. People are getting pissed off about it. It's front and center in the political minds. This is going to make a mess. This bubble, I'm telling you, their days are numbered. Full disclosure, I am short NVIDIA for just that reason. Meanwhile, we've got General Mills is out this morning. This is interesting. They have dramatically cut their forecast. They're now predicting negative profit growth for the year. Why? Reasons will not surprise you. The consumer is tapped. They can't afford it. So they're trading down for cheaper alternatives. Now, nothing in this article about lowering prices, which is what companies like Coke and Pepsi have done. But that is interesting. Again, the consumer struggles showing front and center with Wall Street's profitability. And even as that is coming out, we got this article out of the UK. Unemployment in the UK has reached its highest level in 5 years. In particular, no surprise here, the youth, the young workers are taking it the hardest. Wait till you see these youth unemployment rates in the UK. You know what? Everything that is being done by the ruling elites, and that's in Europe and in the US, which includes your World Economic Forum, your WEFR types, and the Trump administration alike. Everything they have done has been to the benefit of the older ownership class at the expense of the younger wage earners. And everybody wants their stock bubbles. Everybody wants their housing bubbles. We don't want asset prices to go down. And then we're at the same time pretending to care about home affordability and youth unemployment. These things just might be related, guys. I'm beginning to think these things might be related. Warner Brothers Discovery is reopening talks with Paramount. Looks like Paramount has increased their bid once again for Warner Brothers Discovery, who had cut a deal with Netflix previously to merge. Netflix basically gave them a week to ponder that offer. It looks like we've got a bidding war going on for Warner Brothers here. And last but not least, we got the Bank of International Settlements. is worried about big banks' exposure to synthetic risk transfers, otherwise known as significant risk transfers, or SRTs. Now, this is interesting because the whole point of SRTs is so the banks can get their risk off the balance sheet. And the Bank of International Settlements is saying, we're worried that your balance sheet is taking on too much new risk associated with these SRTs. Wait till you see the circular scam that the big banks are running with these SRTs. And at the end of the day, who's really going to pay the price for it? If you guessed your retirement, congratulations. You've been paying attention. Got a lot to talk about this morning. Why don't we shrink my big melon of a head and let's see what's going on in the world of finance this morning. Don't forget that like button. And you new guys, hit that subscribe button so you can come back tomorrow and have your coffee with the melon heads as we go through markets every single business day. And that is some good wake-up juice this morning. The S&P 500 is lower by almost 20 points here, 0.29% in the red, but off the lows of the morning. The Dow is down 44 points, 0.09%. It was down over 100 points at one point this morning, so just off the lows as well. But the NASDAQ leading the way lower, off by 0.6% here, 150 points lower ahead of the open. The sell-off in tech is continuing this morning. We've got the dollar is sharply higher this morning, up by 30 basis points, 97.39. That's the highest we've seen the DXY in quite a while here. So the dollar is staging something of a comeback. And looking at the bond market, we've got a mixed bag. Yield on the longer end are a little bit lower, with a little bit higher in the middle of the yield curve. The 30-year treasury is at 4.682%. That's lower by almost 2 points. The 10-year is at 4.047, off by a half a point. The two-year yield is at 3.426%. That is higher by 1.5 points. And the one-month treasury is unchanged at 3.691. So the bond market is quiet once again. Looking over at the commodities board, we got a lot of red this morning. This is interesting. Metals, we're still seeing the volatility in metals here. These $100 moves in gold, they continue this morning. We're just below $4,900 an ounce for spot gold, down $90, $91, almost $92 here. 1.85% lower for spot gold. April COMEX gold futures are at $49.14. That's lower by $132 or 2.6%. Silver is having another volatile day, albeit somewhat tame compared to what we saw earlier this month. Spot silver is at $74.20. That's down by $2.40 or 3.1% lower. March COMEX silver futures are at $74.04. That's lower by $3.90 or about 5% lower. Still big intraday moves in the silver market here, but I still like the shiny. Copper, meanwhile, lower by 2.3%. Platinum is off by 3.1%. Palladium is lower by 0.8%. And look at oil here. This is pretty wild. The Iranians just basically claimed they were closing the Strait of Hormuz, and oil doesn't care. West Texas Intermediate is lower by a dime. It's like just 10 cents worth of middle finger to the Ayatollah. Oh, you're going to mess with the global flow of oil? I don't believe you. $62.67 a barrel for April WTI futures, 0.13% lower. Even Brent oil is lower by 90 cents here this morning, even though the Iranians say they're going to mess with the oil flow. The world doesn't seem to care. That's interesting. Looking over at Bitcoin this morning, $68,115 as priced on Coinbase. Lower by about 740 bucks. If we zoom in a little bit, we can see Bitcoin sold off just a little over the weekend. We're now a little bit lower than we were heading into it. But I would also point out that we kind of have something like a triangle pattern here, a flag pattern. This is a bearish continuation pattern. I expect we break lower any day now in Bitcoin. And here is the big one this morning. This is the story that I think this was meant to be like this big geopolitical event, but the world is really yawning at this. Iran says it's closing parts of Hormuz Strait as U.S. talks resume. Parts of the Strait of Hormuz, one of the world's most important oil shipping lanes, will be closed for several hours on Tuesday as part of Iran's military drills, state TV and the Islamic Republic reported. The drills announced previously come as Iran and the U.S. start a second round of negotiations in Geneva. Oil reversed losses on the news with Brent trading 0.1% higher at $68.74 a barrel. It's now lower by about $2. The main transit routes of the Strait of Hormuz are under the control of the IRGC Navy. Okay, sure, little buddy. And Iran has no red lines when it comes to safety, security, to safeguarding security in this region, said State TV, referring to the Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps. Okay, so they like to safeguard the security in the region, and that's why they put mines in the Strait of Hormuz and shoot missiles and drones at boats. That's how they safeguard security. All right, we all have different ideas, different approaches in life. Shortly beforehand, Iran Supreme Leader Ayatollah Ali Khamenei stepped up his warnings that the U.S. will suffer if it strikes the Middle Eastern country, as President Trump has repeatedly threatened if the sides can't reach a deal. Something looking increasingly likely as both sides kind of dig in their heels here. Now, look, this is looking at marine traffic. Here is the Strait of Hormuz, which, again, only about 20 nautical miles wide at its narrowest. We have got plenty of boats traversing back and forth the Strait of Hormuz here. This is there's an LNG tanker in the Strait of Hormuz. There's a container ship. There's a crude oil tanker. All right, plenty of boats are moving around. But you will notice you do have a little bit of traffic backing up over here on one side and traffic backing up over here on the other side. A lot of stationary tankers. So at least some captains are opting to wait for these Iranian exercises to run their course before traversing the strait. But again, here, guys, like we mentioned in the opening monologue, it's not really clear who this would hurt more, the Iranians or the rest of the world. It would certainly hurt Europe and Saudi Arabia. But the Iranians would be inflicting a lot of damage on themselves doing this, because without the sale of oil through the strait, they can't get their hands on any money that they need to pay for everything they use. But again, for the U.S. part, the lesson learned in the Red Sea, and I think it played a big role in our decision to grab Maduro in Venezuela, is that it's just too easy to deny navigation these days because of low-cost drones and missiles and the expense of guarding against them. It's just too easy for anybody with a militia to shut down a major global shipping bottleneck. And look, in the Red Sea, we won all the battles. I mean, every time they shot at one of our ships, they either missed or we intercepted them. There were some close calls. There were some friendly fire events. But the Navy had a near-perfect performance in Yemen and in the Red Sea, and still they had a hard time stopping the flow of drones and missiles with the Houthis. And the Iranians were the ones giving them to them, so it's a good bet that the Iranians would have an even easier time doing it. But again, they'd be shooting themselves in the foot. Just one big mess. And, you know, Iran is the next logical target. If the goal of all these geopolitical maneuvers has been to cut China off from oil in the event of a war over Taiwan, then you start with Venezuela, and then Iran is your next logical target, leaving only Russia to supply them with the oil. And there isn't really that much pipeline capacity between Russia and China. They would have to sail through the first island chain to get there, which the U.S. Navy would almost certainly blockade if it ever came down to it. So these are all just chess pieces being pre-positioned ahead of all that. Oh, 2027 is going to be just great. Meanwhile, we got plenty going on in the AI bubble this morning. This one in MarketWatch, the math is getting challenging. You think economic reality starting to bite as UBS downgrades U.S. tech stocks, something they almost never do. CapEx commitments are creating a bottleneck in funding for AI developers. They're spending all the money in the world, and sooner or later, they're going to run out of it. Downgrading U.S. technology stocks is not something an asset allocator does lightly. The sector has outperformed 2 years in every three for the last four decades, but UBS Wealth Management has taken that bold step. Ulrich Hoffmann Burkhardy, global head of equities, said that the firm has lowered its recommendation from overweight to neutral and tells investors that the risk-reward profile is less favorable as economic realities sink in. In a podcast broadcast Tuesday, Hoffmann Burkhardy outlined her conviction that answering the question how AI capital expenditure will be turned into profits is becoming more difficult. It's because there are no profits. That might be why it's difficult to answer that question. AI capital expenditures has now hit 2% of GDP, she points out. And although this investment addresses a potential market of $30 trillion in global knowledge industry worker wages, the profits to be derived from that are not as straightforward to calculate. Now, look at the top five hyperscalers' CapEx numbers. Look at this chart. This is money just being shoveled into the fire here. And as much as 2024 was wild and 2025 was wild, look at how they have started 2026 with this big revisions to CapEx. These numbers actually are a little low based on the estimates I've seen. I have seen over $650 billion of CapEx among just the big four hyperscalers who have now shed $1.3 trillion in market cap since announcing that CapEx, which means every $1 of CapEx equals $2 of shareholder value destroyed. How much longer can they keep this up? Now, the article goes on to talk about fierce competition here, about all the players, OpenAI, Anthropic, Gemini, XAI, Mistral, now all these Chinese names, ByteDance, Alibaba, Moonshot, DeepSeek. The space is becoming heavily commoditized, and at this stage, companies are earning zero economic profits. When costs for training the models are factored in, the companies no longer break even and rely on constant rounds of funding to continue operations. Something I've been warning about for years. When that funding dries up, this bubble dies on the vine. Anthropic CEO Dario Amodi admitted last week that revenues merely allow AI companies to raise funding to buy more compute resources and capacity. Access to funding then is likely to become a bottleneck, she says. And since the Chinese developers have a cost advantage, their competitive pressure, even with models that are less performant, is a big challenge to the dominant U.S. players. So UBS is downgrading big tech, probably contributing to the selling in big tech this morning. And they're not the only bank that is worried about this. AI spending by U.S. companies has fund managers looking overseas for stocks. This one in Barron's this morning. Global fund managers are hot on stocks heading into the middle of the first quarter, according to a closely tracked survey from Bank of America, but aren't keen on chasing U.S. equity markets amid growing concerns over the pace of artificial intelligence spending. BofA's monthly fund manager survey published on Tuesday showed the world's biggest investors, which control more than $500 billion in assets, are the most overweight they've been on stocks in 14 months. They're betting on stronger corporate earnings growth, a weaker U.S. dollar, and solid domestic growth. A net 24% of survey respondents see earnings rising by more than 10% this year, the highest since August of 2021, while 38% see Kevin Warsh's appointment at Federal Reserve Chairman weighing on the greenback, meaning a weaker dollar. Even more, according to the survey, see it leading to higher treasury bond yields. But those same investors are also rotating out of U.S. stocks in favor of other markets and opting for underweight positions in the dollar, treasuries, and the S&P 500. Part of that positioning, the survey indicated, is tied to concerns of overspending on AI investments. The so-called big four hyperscalers, Microsoft, Alphabet, Amazon, and Meta, have committed to $650 billion in data center capex this year, a 60% increase from 2025 levels, with billions more likely needed to meet expected demand before the end of the decade. A record 35% of fund managers are telling company CEOs to focus on balance sheet improvements over new investment, the survey noted, as fears of an AI bubble remain the biggest risk cited in the February poll. So they want companies to be more responsible with debt, more responsible with spending, improve their cash positions, which means get out of big tech, which is burning cash as fast as humanly possible. Stock market action has in part reflected that concern, with the S&P now down 2% over the past 10 days, its biggest pullback since November, and the NASDAQ composite down more than 3% for the year. The BofA survey also detailed some of the ongoing rotation within U.S. equities. Investors are moving to energy and material stocks at the quickest pace since April of 2022, and overweight value stocks versus growth stocks by the largest margin since April of 2025. So we've seen consumer staple stocks have been doing very good. Obviously, materials and energy have done very good to start the year as people sell tech and move into those sectors. Meanwhile, we've got Trump's trade advisor Navarro says the administration may force data center builders like Meta to internalize costs. They're light on details of what that means, but the writing is on the wall here. What AI is doing to power prices is becoming a problem. President Donald Trump's trade and manufacturing advisor Peter Navarro said on Sunday that the White House may force data center builders to absorb their costs as voters continue to sour on the economy and utility prices soar. All of these data center builders, Meta on down, need to pay for all of the costs, Navarro said on Fox News Sunday Morning Futures. They need to not only pay for the electricity that they're using on the grid, but they have to pay for the resiliency that they're affecting as well. They need to pay for the water, so there's activity action here going forward where we force them to internalize costs. Navarro did not detail what the White House's plan is to force data center builders to internalize costs would look like. CNBC has reached out to the White House for clarification. When asked about Navarro's remarks, a Meta spokesperson said the company already pays for all of its energy usage. Meta pays the full cost for energy used by our data centers so they aren't passed on to consumers. Yet that's not really true. Yes, Meta pays for their power by outbidding consumers, driving the prices higher, which means consumers are having to pay higher utility bills. Both can be true at the same time. Meta goes on to say, we go beyond that by paying for new and upgraded local infrastructure, as well as adding new power to the grid. Yeah, I don't know so much about that new power to the grid. They claim they are, but data centers get built a hell of a lot faster than power plants do. But you can see here that, you know, besides the fact that investors are now worried about the data center CapEx and the destruction on the balance sheets and the rotating out of those stocks, you've also got political pressure on these data centers that's going to make them more expensive to operate by forcing them to build their own power costs. And they're getting increasingly creative and increasingly wasteful in how they're managing that problem. Look at this one in the Wall Street Journal. How jet engines are powering data centers. Companies are converting aircraft engines to land-based natural gas turbines for power generation in the AI boom. And that is grotesquely inefficient. These are the same companies, remember, that were telling us to eat bugs just a couple of months ago. Eat bugs and get rid of our straws for the climate. Now they're using decommissioned airplane engines to power their chatbots. Oh, they just love the climate over at the big tech. In the battle for AI dominance, every engine of the economy is getting recruited into the fight, including jet engines. Jet engine leasing and repair company FTAI Aviation plans to start selling a modified version of the engine used in the Boeing 737 to power data centers this year. Its shares are up roughly 42% since they announced the power turbine business, which Jefferies estimates could add $750 million of earnings before interest, taxes, depreciation, and amortization this year. That represents about 52% of the EBITDA that analysts polled by FactSet expected FTAI to bring in this year before it announced the power business. Others pursuing this conversion include private equity-backed Pro Energy, which sells natural gas turbines that are adapted from the same engine that powers the 747. Aircraft startup Boom Supersonic in December said it will start selling a modified version of its engine as a natural gas power turbine. AI data center startup Crusoe is its first customer and is expected to get its turbines in 2027. So they're already bidding up power prices. So what? Now they're going to start bidding up airplane prices too, because they're going to start buying all the engines and then they'll start using those to power their data centers. Okay. Or maybe, just maybe, we want to stop lighting all this money on fire for little to no economic benefit whatsoever. I just throw it out there. You guys do what you want with it. Shifting to the consumer here, as we waste money on data centers. Oh, that's right. We have a whole other economy and it's not doing well. General Mills shares fall as weak consumer demand triggers an outlook cut. Shares of General Mills are down about 3.6% in pre-market trading on Tuesday after the company cut its full-year fiscal 26 outlook, citing weak consumer sentiment and a slower-than-expected volume recovery. In a release ahead of Consumer Analyst Group in New York conference, General Mills said Chairman and CEO Jeff Harmening will note the company has been hard at work transforming General Mills under its Accelerate strategy. They always have some weird name. Oh, yeah, our turnaround plan. It's always going very well as they cut their profit outlook. However, General Mills now expects organic net sales to decline 1.5% to 2% in fiscal 2026 compared with its prior forecast of a decline of 1% to an increase of 1%. So they went from plus or minus 1% to minus 1.5% to 2%. They are further cutting their profit forecast. Adjusted operating profit and adjusted diluted earnings per share are now projected to fall 16 to 20%, yikes, in constant currency versus a previous outlook, which called for a 10 to 15% decline. The company attributed the downgrade to weak consumer sentiment, heightened uncertainty, and significant volatility, which have weighed on category growth and disrupted purchasing patterns. And I went looking and I couldn't find anything about lower prices in any of these articles about General Mills, which some in the consumer staples category have been reacting to these profit downgrades by lowering their prices. General Mills appears to be resisting that. Right now, that stock is down 5%. The opening bell has just rung here, $46.06 for General Mills, down 18.8% over the last year. This one has had a rough couple of months. And this is even after consumer staples had a very good beginning of the year. Now we're seeing it give up most of that. And the weak consumer is not just a U.S. story. We've also got that in the U.K. as well. And why? Because, well, jobs, unemployment is rising and wages haven't gone up at the same rate of inflation. UK unemployment hits highest rate for nearly 5 years. This one in BBC this morning. Unemployment in the UK rose to its highest rate in nearly 5 years at the end of 2025. Official figures show the unemployment rate climbed to 5.2% for the 3 months ended December. That's up from 5.1% for the 3 months ended November, according to the Office for National Statistics. But young people are bearing the brunt, with unemployment for those aged 16 to 24 rising to 16.1%, its highest in more than 10 years. And guys, this may be why that whole like bootstrap thing doesn't go over so well with Gen Z and with younger folks when the unemployment rate is three times the national average in that demographic. Telling them to work harder at a job they can't get, probably not going to go over so well. For those in work, wages are still rising faster than prices, but at a rate at which they're growing, it's continued to slow. So that last sentence is important also. Besides the fact that unemployment is rising and that it is ridiculously high for younger workers who can't afford homes, at the same time, wages at least are rising a little bit faster than inflation right now. But that statistic is deceiving, number one, because these are government stats. You always have to question them. But also in 2021, 2, and 3, inflation was rising so much faster than wages were that even though wages are now outpacing inflation by a paltry amount here, it's just a rounding error. It doesn't even begin to make up for what happened in the last couple of years. And look, you can change the numbers a little bit here, but this is the same story here in the U.S. The unemployment rate is it's not rising. Technically, they dropped the unemployment rate last month, but that came along with all those big downward revisions to the jobs numbers. So you can't help but question the non-farm payrolls. For all intents and purposes, unemployment is trending up in the United States and certainly disproportionately affecting younger workers. Meanwhile, Warner Brothers reopens deal talks with Paramount as they raise their bid. I'm not going to spend a lot of time on this. We've covered this merger story. It looked like Warner Brothers and Netflix were set to merge. They had accepted the offer for about $27 a share that Netflix had offered them. Paramount came in, raised their price to $31 a share. And now Warner Brothers, basically, they have 7 days to consider Paramount's apparently superior offer. They're offering more per share, but the deals are not apples to apples. One includes the cable networks, one doesn't. One just includes the movie studios. So more drama with this merger. We'll let you know if anything changes here. And last one of the day, this story cracked me up this morning when I was reading this. And we've talked about this subject in the past. Lack of data on SRTs is hindering risk assessment, the BIS says. All right, SRT stands for significant risk transfers. Some people call them synthetic risk transfers. Although people don't like the synthetic word because it reminds them of the GFCs and CDOs, and so they decided to call it significant instead. And the BIS, that's the Bank for International Settlements. So what is going on here? The Basel Committee on Banking Supervision called for closer cooperation between regulators as a lack of data is hindering its assessment of credit exposure from synthetic risk transfer deals. Investors are using loans to cut the amount of equity in such deals, which are aimed at reducing loan exposure at banks, implying that credit risk could actually come back to the banking sector, the committee said in a report released Thursday. The scale of funding is hard to judge given the private nature of this lending. All right, so this is important here. You have to understand the whole point of a synthetic risk transfer is to get the risk off the balance sheet of the banks. What happens if is the bank cuts a deal with, say, a pension fund? And the pension fund says, we're going to set a lump sum of cash aside in an escrow account. And in exchange for us giving you that money to hold in escrow, you're going to pay us a monthly fee. And then if this loan goes bad, the bank keeps that money. If the loan doesn't go bad at the end of the term, the bank gives the principal back and the pension fund keeps the monthly payouts. So the goal here is that the bank can get the risk of a loan off its books without actually selling the loan, mostly because the banks are worried that they can't sell those loans because they're so risky, nobody wants to buy them. So in a sense, they're renting away the risk in exchange for these payments. But here's the thing. Increasingly, outfits like these pension funds or hedge funds are borrowing money in order to set it aside for these synthetic risk transfers. So the bank loans money to the pension fund, and then the pension fund gives it back to the bank in order to buy the synthetic risk transfer. So has the bank really transferred any risk off their books? Because if the loan gets defaulted on, then the bank keeps the money. And of course, the pension fund gets, they lose everything. But remember, the pension fund got that money by borrowing it from the bank in the first place. So the bank still has the same risk. It's just moving money around in circles. Why is every sector of the economy doing this? Banks use SRTs as a way to insure loans against default, typically obtaining protection covering between 5 and 15% of the value. It lets them boost their solvency ratios and increase their leeway for new lending, acquisitions, or shareholder payouts. SRT investors, often pension or hedge funds, can use debt leverage to enhance returns, and the incentive to do that is larger in lower coupon SRTs. Banks which fund investors in SRT transactions can mitigate the credit risks by applying prudent haircuts and limits, assessing liquidity of the SRT collateral. The committee said, and this is great, banks shouldn't be accepting their own SRTs as collateral, since this would go against the very core principle of risk transfer. Guys, this is the Three Stooges talking about how Larry owes Mo $10 and Mo owes Shep $10 and Shep owes Curly $10 and just passing this $10 bill back and forth. Banks accepting their own synthetic risk transfers as collateral is a whole new level of stupidity. And the Bank of International Settlements is saying, like, we don't know how much they're doing this because of the private nature of these assets. The regulators don't have a lot of visibility into this. Oh, this is just going to be great. And this is just one more facet of how these alternative assets and everything they're doing, all the hoops they're creating and jumping through in order to avoid price discovery, because at the end of the day, the assets that underline all this crap are not accurately marked to their market value. They're all just pretending they're worth something that they're not. Just somehow at the end of the day, we all know it's going to be us who pays the price for it once again. Hey, I just want to say thank you very much to Travis is doing this again. Travis from Real Estate Mindset. Hey, what's going on, brother? He says, is Armando here? They do this from time to time. I think we'll be hearing from Armando briefly. Travis is calling him out here. That's great. Travis says again, please confirm your shirt is green. You're a machine. Yeah, I think it's a green to a bluish green. I can confirm shirt is green. What is going on in the chat today? I don't know, but yep, green shirt. Thanks, Travis. You bonkers SOB you. M&J says the proper term for the shirt is teal. Is it teal? Is it aquamarine? I don't know. Is it periwinkle blue? I don't know. Okay. This is going downhill fast, guys, but thank you, M&J, for supporting the channel as they argue about the color of my shirt. My mug is white, by the way. That I think we can all agree on. Armando, there he is. He says, India is seizing more tankers too. I had not heard of India seizing the tankers. If they are, it's probably associated with the terms of the deal that we just cut to sell them Venezuelan oil in exchange for them not buying the Russian oil. I had heard that the U.S. seized a Russian tanker in the Indian Ocean that was heading to India. I haven't heard of the Indians actually seizing a tanker. That would be a significant development if that is the case, Armando. Thank you very much, sir, for supporting the channel. What it was, Red Stapler, yada, yada. All right, Milton, we're going to see you found my stapler there. He says, check out Dale Deeds for Senate exposing ATL bond. I don't know what any of these names mean. I cannot confirm or deny either way, and we're going to stop shy of endorsing political candidates here. Exposing ATL bond, is that something like, I don't know enough about it. Well, Red Stapler, sorry, brother, I can't weigh in because I'm a little out of my depth on that one. But thank you for being a Melonhead member for 1 month. Armando's back again, says land wars, oil wars, tariff wars, AI wars, anyone? No, thank you. Well, let's see. We're fighting over land. Yeah, they're fighting over land in Europe. Oil, yeah, we're fighting over oil. We're always fighting over oil. Tariff wars, it's a trade war. They call it a trade war. That's more of a paper skirmish. We're not actually shooting at each other over tariffs yet. I hope we're not going to be shooting at each other. And of course, AI wars, well, that just completes the set. Sure, why not? Armando, thank you for the healthy dose of doom and gloom. We've got more color commentary from M&J. Says teal green is the final vote. Melon coin for all. Teal green. Okay, sure. Sure, why not? It's not the most intellectual debate we've had on this channel in our history, but Armando's back again, says, don't forget that food was rationed during World War II. Everything was rationed during World War II. That was a full mobilization of the U.S. economy. We have seen nothing like that since. They rationed it all. As a matter of fact, my mini-me just gave me a penny book for my birthday. It was a really great present. Thank you, Mia. My daughter gave me this penny book, and right there in the 1940s was the three steel cents for 41, 42, and 43 when copper was rationed because of the war effort. And so for 3 years, they made pennies out of steel. And by the way, if you ever come across a 1944 steel penny, which most of them have like rusted away out of existence, but they did make a couple in 1944 that are supposedly worth millions of dollars if you can find one. So they're out there too. Pay attention, all you guys with your jars and buckets of pennies out there. Thank you, Armando, for supporting the channel. Real Estate Mindset back again says, don't forget, Armando is a stud. We're all studs here, brother. Thank you, Travis, for supporting the channel. I appreciate it. I don't know what's going on in the chat this morning. Tim Duffy, 8411, says, U.S. Mint now wants $173 for Eagles. Important? No. No, it's not. The $173 for Eagles, those are commemorative collector's items sealed in their cases. There are a lot of people that are pointing to these numbers, trying to make a bigger and bigger deal out of it. Look, you can get silver Eagles for way less than $173 on any number of coin dealer websites. I usually recommend findbullionprices.com is a pretty good price, pretty good place to find cheap prices for BU Eagles. Right now, you can get them for $13 or $14 over spot, which is well below this 173 number. There's a lot of people who, no matter what is happening in the world, the sky is falling in silver. And so they will take something like the U.S. Mint asking $173 for commemorative U.S. Eagle and be like, see, silver should be $173 an ounce. It's hyperbolic garbage. To be honest with you, Tim Duffy, I do not worry about the U.S. Mint's price for Eagles when I can get them for much cheaper at any coin shop anywhere. Thank you, sir, for supporting the channel. Nashville Pasta Man says in Columbia, Tennessee, they passed a $500 million tax for power to build a 15-mile water pipeline with eminent domain. Seven Facebook data centers are power bills skyrocketing. Well, you can sleep easy knowing that your $500 million for 15 miles of water pipe to Facebook's data center is going to good use, right? I'm sure Meta and the history of that company and all the just absolutely wonderful things for the well-being of people, in particular young girls, that that company is responsible for, I'm sure they're going to do great things with that $500 million of your tax money aimed at sending them water for their data centers. But don't worry. Navarro says they're going to internalize the costs. Yes, internalize, hold them here, near and dear, close to their heart. Thank you, Pasta Man, for supporting the channel. A lot of data centers going up in Tennessee these days. Hey, Pasta Man's back again, says there's a major citizen lawsuit to be filed in March. You know, I think you're going to see that increasingly, these lawsuits, protests, campaigns to halt data center construction. We have something similar going on in my neighborhood as well. All over the country, people are increasingly opposed to these things because they're not seeing any benefits, but they are getting all the costs of it. And I can tell you, all these companies, they'll come in and they'll promise all this economic activity for the town. The town will give them favorable bonds and borrowing. They will pay for none of it when the bubble bursts. They are going to abandon all these projects midstream, and the towns will be left with eyesores for decades. Mark my words. And then half of these data centers are probably going to be converted to craft breweries, escape rooms, or axe throwing facilities. Who knows what they're going to do with them? Thank you, Pasta Man, for supporting the channel. Sean Wilkinson, 7720, says GEV is already supplying turbines for behind, I'm guessing behind Meta, for Meta. GEV, that's GE Vernova, or I always mispronounce it. They're the spinoff of General Electric that makes the turbines. But the thing is, GEV is already backed up for like 5 years. And that was a year ago. That five-year backup is an old statistic. It's probably closer to 6 or 7 now, Sean. So GEV cannot build their turbines fast enough to supply them for the number of data centers that are being built, which is why they're now turning to jet engines instead of the GEV turbines. And also, while we're on the subject, Caterpillar reported fantastic earnings this quarter because they're also buying Caterpillar's big diesel generators. They're basically locomotive engines in a container. They're buying those too. These data centers are burning anything and everything they can in order to power them because the grid can't keep up with them. Thank you very much, Sean, for supporting the channel, sir. Armando is back again, says Travis, the real estate hunk. All right, you two, get a room. Travis and Armando have a thing going there. I don't know, man. They exchange gazes like Sam and Frodo. Music started playing in the background. Have fun, you two. Sorry. Rational Investor 2002 says, did you see Burry's latest post on Palantir? Not on Palantir specifically. No, I have seen a couple of Burry's posts recently. I know Burry is short Palantir and NVIDIA. The one thing I can tell you about Palantir, interestingly enough, they got kicked out of, was it Switzerland? Booted Palantir from their military business because they were worried about backdooring the technology, which, by the way, if you just spend 5 minutes listening to Alex Karp talk, and you'll kick Palantir out of anything you hired them to do also. Little Joffrey Baratheon MF-er he is. But no, specifically on Burry's most recent post on Palantir, I have not. Just can't comment on it. I haven't seen it. Thank you, Rational Investor 2002. Jolly Lollipop 1 says, I believe the insiders know that Trump will taco and there will be no attack on Iran, which explains gold and oil going down. Do I concur? I would say 50-50. I'm not attached to either outcome. Let's not, like, Trump will chicken out. He's already bombed them less than a year ago. So it's not like he wouldn't. I mean, he did. He just did, like, a few months ago. President Trump wants the Iranian regime to topple. He saw those protests going on last month, and I think he saw an opportunity to take a piece off the board that has been a major thorn in the side of the United States for several decades. Will it work? I don't know. Because, you know, going to war with America in that part of the world could galvanize support for the regime, or it could topple them over. It could backfire for us as well. I honestly just couldn't tell you, but it's the 2020s and bombs are flying left and right. Missiles are flying left and right. So no, I mean, I would say 50-50, Jolly Lolly. I'm not attached to it. Gold going down. Gold has been going down for a couple of weeks here. I don't think Iran is really moving gold right now. Oil going down today is significant. That's oil markets. Like, we're tired. You guys go have your fight, have your talks, do what you're going to do. And then let us know what you decide on. And I can't help but wonder, is how does Venezuela change the calculus of what's going on in Iran right now? Right. We're not going to be increasing Venezuelan oil production anytime soon, but we are redirecting it. It's certainly not going to Cuba anymore. You can see how dark it is from space in Cuba now. So does that somewhat lessen the blow of the Strait of Hormuz? I don't think the oil coming out of Venezuela is anywhere near enough to offset the Strait of Hormuz. Maybe for the U.S. it is, not for Europe. Thank you, Jolly Lollipop, for supporting the channel. Bart Stapleton says, shout out to Travis and Mitch at Real Estate Mindset. Yep, shout out to Travis and Mitch as well. They are fighting the good fight on property taxes over there. Check out Real Estate Mindset. It's the most bonkers channel in real estate. And while we're on the subject, I will give a shout out to my fellow doomer, Melody Wright, as well. Travis and Melody, good friends of mine. We have worked together often in the past. Thank you very much, Bart. Ian Ross Actual. What's going on, Ian? He says UK public sector salaries are still rising, but private sector salary growth is stalling. Government propping up the numbers. Who would have thunk it? Yeah, they do it here too. And that's interesting. Government, public sector rising faster than private sector. It's not supposed to work that way. The public sector, you're supposed to be getting job security in exchange for slightly lower wages. That's historically been the trade-off with working for the government, because the government never fires people. Although here in the United States, government's firing people left and right, aren't they? So a lot of pre-standing or long-standing traditions in the labor market and correlations no longer playing out here. And that is a good data point. Thank you very much, Mr. Ian Ross Actual, for supporting the channel. Hey, Mish is back. He says, what color is Jack's shirt? Oh, did he pull it? Teal 47%, green 44, other 9, 440 people weighed in on the color of my shirt. Okay, perhaps I'm downplaying the importance of this issue. All right, somebody get Greg Lutz on the phone over at Fox News. He can put on his dad's sneakers and talk about how important this polling is. All right. That is interesting. Thank you, Mish, for supporting the channel. Armando Reyes says, could the dumping of treasuries raise oil prices? All right, I got to think about that. Dumping of treasuries. Dumping treasuries sends interest rates higher. Okay, so long-term, if there is a long-term trend of dumping U.S. treasuries, eventually it raises oil prices. Dumping U.S. treasuries drives interest rates higher. Higher interest rates means more expensive CapEx in the energy sector. More expensive CapEx typically means fewer holes being poked in the ground because it's more expensive to borrow to drill, which will take a few years, but would eventually translate to tighter oil supplies and would eventually translate into higher oil prices. Also, rising interest rates generally slows down the economy, which also puts downward pressure on oil prices. So short-term, lower oil prices, long-term, higher oil prices from the dumping of U.S. treasuries. But I would add right now, U.S. treasuries are not being dumped really, or at the very least, the dumping is being managed by issuance at the treasury. Yields aren't really moving that much these days, certainly not on the long end. Thank you, Armando, for supporting the channel, sir. Real Estate Mindset says, could Armando's beast beard raise oil prices? I don't know. Is Armando part Italian? Maybe, you know, Italians tend to get a little greasier. Maybe Italians growing out their beards will increase the amount of oil supply on the market. I don't know. I'm probably going to get some hate from the Italians in my comment for that. Hey, I'm a quarter greaseball. Don't shoot me, guys. Thank you, Real Estate Mindset, for supporting the channel. Lily Von Stoop says, the Spanish Inquisition collectively agree on regular green, not teal. I was not expecting that, Lily, because I'm told that nobody ever expects the Spanish Inquisition. Thank you, Lily, for supporting the channel. Forest green. I could go either way on the color of the shirt here. Forest green, I can't go forest. It's just not dark enough to go forest green. Sorry, Armando, you lost me on that one, but thank you for supporting the channel. Real Estate Mindset, Jack, this is very important. Is your shirt green or teal? Please don't fail me. I got to say green. When I looked at the shirt this morning, I said green. So it's green. Good God. Mom says juniper on the color. Oh, juniper. No, it's heavenly spruce. And we're just making up colors now. Thanks, Mish, M&J. So did we not settle on a shirt color, TBC? No, this is just one of the great mysteries of the universe. So, yeah, the answer to the what color is my shirt, 41. Armando says, thank you, M&J, and everyone else. Thank you guys as well. How do we say it? Akshara. I'm going to have to ask Shara how to pronounce that name. Mr. AK, thank you for becoming a YouTube member. Welcome to the Melon Patch. Thank you for supporting the channel. Just a reminder, new members, you get a free super chat once a month. Use that for anything other than my shirt color, and I will read and respond to your questions live on the air. Break My Wallet Motorsports says axe throwing attracts hipsters. Gross. Well, if there's a craft brewery next to an axe throwing place, I don't know, what are you going to put a head shop in the same place? Maybe we could turn these data centers into little hipster strip malls. Sure, why not? Where do hipsters eat? I don't even know. I'm too old. I just turned 46. I'm not even going to venture a guess where hipsters are eating these days. Thank you, Break My Wallet Motorsports, for supporting the channel. What is my favorite bird? I got to go with the bald eagle, baby. We went to the Hershey Park Zoo over the weekend with the family. We saw some bald eagles, and they are just freaking majestic birds. And, man, when they look at you, they got them eyes that just like, sir, can I interest you in freedom? Or perhaps a Tomahawk cruise missile, if the answer is no. There's just something about bald eagles that are just badass birds. So that is my favorite bird, Travis. That one I can give you a definitive answer on. And KDM28 says, ChatGPT says dark green. Okay, well, it's definitely not dark green then, since we got AI weighing in on this. Thank you, KDM, for the laugh. All right, the shirt commentary, I think we're done with that one. But I do want to say thank you, everybody, for having your coffee with the Melon Heads this morning. Thank you, guys, for wondering about the color of my shirt. Don't forget that like button and that subscribe button for you new guys on the way out, should you feel so inclined. Thank you guys for the super chats and the generous support of the channel, as well as your magnanimous melon heads on Patreon, YouTube, and Buy Me a Coffee. Links down below, should you feel so inclined. Hi, Mom. Hi, Dad. Love you guys, everybody. Till next time, live small and dream big.